After a surprising run to the playoffs, the Seahawks have been surprisingly aggressive in the early stages of free agency. What does Ringer writer Danny Kelly think of what Seattle's done so far? And what does he think they're going to do in the draft? We're going to find out with Danny as a special guest on our latest Locked On Seahawks.
You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, host of the Locked On Seahawks podcast, your daily Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. And a special thanks to the 12s out there, as always, for making Locked On Seahawks your first listen 5 days a week. We're fired up to have a special guest joining us for our Thursday episode. Previously was the king of field goals, now a senior writer at The Ringer, also has a couple podcasts he's involved with as well with The Ringer. Danny Kelly joining the show. Welcome, Danny. I'm fired up to talk Seahawks with you, and it's been a long time coming.
I know, me too, man. I'm super excited. So thank you again for having me on. I'm excited to talk Seahawks. I'm excited to talk Bijan Robinson, who we decided before the show are officially going to – Seahawks are taking Bijan Robinson, so that's going
to
be fun.
We're going to have so many fans with pitchforks coming after us. I can just envision this. But we got to get to the first question here before we even get down the road to drafting a running back in the first round. Should Marshawn have gotten the ball at the goal line? Now, we're not going to go down that wormhole.
I've sat on the fence for a long time. I think they made the right play call. They were set up. I think they still should have ran it just once to try it. But I don't have like a huge sense of dread that they didn't do that. I think that's actually based on the way the defense was. It was a fine decision. It just did not work out.
Yeah, I still look back on it and think that was the right play call. I just don't know that I liked who it was to.
Yeah.
And I always wonder what would have happened if Jermaine Kearse would have done a little better job running his route there.
Yeah.
But we'll never know. And unfortunately,
would have, could have, should have. Yeah.
But looking back at this last season, I know that there are very few people out there that were expecting the Seahawks to win 9 games.
Right.
And go to the postseason, and Geno Smith to be a Pro Bowl quarterback, the rookie class to have all the contributors. When you look back at this season, how shocked were you with the final result? And away from Geno, because everybody was stunned by that, but what was the biggest surprise to you in the development of that team becoming a playoff squad?
That's a great question. I think having two rookie tackles come in and play really well, or at least like moderately well, at the league average or above, coming in and year one, and that I think was a huge game changer for them. Obviously it helped what Geno was able to do, which I think, like you said, was a huge shock. And I don't know if anyone, even the Seahawks, I don't think expected him to do that. Pete Carroll even talked about that, I think, at the combine, how he's like, look, we kind of strung him along on 1-year contracts here and there. And then they didn't even end up signing Geno until like late in the off season. They were sort of, I think, planning on seeing what they could get out of Drew Lock. And then Geno just came back and absolutely like made the decision for them. So, but I think having, you know, Charles Cross, having Abraham Lucas be able to step in and not only do well in pass protection, but help with the run game. Obviously, you know, that helped a lot. Kenneth Walker was really good. But to me, just getting two starting tackles in the draft is like unheard of. And having those guys come in and start right away and be pretty good right away is also pretty unheard of. So I think that was a force multiplier for their offense and something that you can't really count on in any given year. Is just sort of one of those things that worked out really, really well for them. And that made an instant massive impact on kind of like how good they could be.
You look at this 2023 season, and this is really the interesting thing, is seeing where that group can go in year two. Who is the player that you are most excited to see the leap that he can make going into that sophomore season?
Ooh, that is a really interesting question. It's crazy because Tariq Woolen was another guy that came in and like gave them just massive, massive surplus of value based on like where they got him. So like it would be fun to see where he ends up going in terms of year two. And then this is a deep cut. Maybe this is like not where you're trying to go, but like I still think the Seahawks need a third receiver. Like they need someone to step up. And so like a guy like Derek Young, who I think flashed at times during the rookie season, and obviously it has the physical talent, the athleticism, the movement skills. He was pretty good as a blocker for them. Having a guy like him come in and like make a big jump or a big impact would be huge for the Seahawks offense. I think, you know, this D. Eskridge is not a second year guy, but for all intents and purposes, like if he made a big leap in year three, that would be absolutely massive for the Seahawks, I think. So I'm really kind of looking at that wide receiver three position, because if DK Metcalf or Tyler Lockett miss any time, it feels like the Seahawks offense really kind of takes a nosedive, or at least is certainly not nearly as explosive and efficient. So having a third receiver that can come in and, you know, do their thing, and I think that would be just a huge help for what they're trying to do. So that was the first thing that came to my mind, is just like finding that third receiver and figuring out like how they can be a little more dynamic outside of DK and Lockett.
It feels like that's been one of their quests that they've been on for like 4 or 5 years, trying to find that efficient number three. And I thought Marquise Goodwin at times last year checked off that box, but then he's an older player. He's had injury issues, and it recurred again last year. I'm with you. Dariq Young actually would be my candidate to make a big jump, just because he's such an intelligent guy too. I mean, he's got an engineering degree. Like, that's the kind of guy that, you know, you look at him year two going from a Division II school. Those are guys that typically make massive leaps.
Totally.
And he didn't get a lot of chances till late in the year. And then when he did get those chances, he took advantage of them. So I would tend to agree with you that that position is going to be a fascinating one. Now, we're in free agency. We're a week and a half in, which means it's basically over. There will be a few other guys that get signed here.
But right.
Most of the money has been spent. And typically, John Schneider and Pete Carroll, the first couple of days of free agency, they're sipping on some cocktails and just chilling. But that was not how it went this year. Were you surprised to see John Schneider, of all people, go out day one and throw $52 million at Draymond Jones? Obviously, that was a big need for him, but
I think so. I don't know. Maybe it was you that wrote this, but like, I think I saw that it was the most money they've spent on an outside free agent since they've been here, in terms of like, I think guaranteed money or something like that, which is like, holy cow, that really is a statement like move, like you were saying. But I think it is a smart one based on multiple factors. Like, number one, he's still pretty young, which is a big part of, I think, why they were willing to give him so much like guaranteed money and all that. Like, he's still in theory ascending player. I want to say I saw that like outside of the elite defensive interior defensive lineman in the NFL, like he was right sort of a tier below in terms of like total pressures and pressure rate from the interior. Like everybody that's had more pressures and higher pressure rate than him, according to PFF, was like what you would consider like one of the elite defensive tackles. So he, I think, is like right there just below in terms of, you know, his production, and he did that in total pressures. He did that in like 13 games too. So like, yes, I think there's some meat on the bone there. So, getting a little bit more interior pressure, you know, I haven't studied him in particular in terms of like his run defense, but like, it sounds like the numbers are pretty solid for how he was as a run defender. And so, you know, I think the big priority in the offseason has to be upgrading that defensive line, because their defense was a huge liability. And I think they could have won more games if they could just like make a few more stops on defense, and they just couldn't do it. Like, there was a four games in the middle of the season where their defense played really well. But like outside of that, it was like one of the worst defenses in the NFL. And so they can't just rely on the draft for that. I think making a splash move like that, you know, it was something that they needed to do, and they had some space to do it. And so Draymond Jones was probably the best available interior defensive lineman for what they were looking for specifically. So I thought that was a great signing. Getting Jaron Reed back, I think, is, you know, a low key kind of like solid signing too, kind of establish the interior defensive line, and then they can do whatever the hell they want in the draft. Like, they're not beholden to trying to take, you know, whoever, a defensive tackle in the first round. They don't have to do that if they don't want to.
This episode is brought your way by FanDuel. We're well past the midway point of the NBA season, so now is the perfect time to download the FanDuel app, America's number one sportsbook, because new customers get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's bonus bets back if your first bet doesn't win. Just download the FanDuel sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Then you can bet on everything from the money line to points scored and three-pointers drained. I'm a big fan of betting on player props, including FanDuel's Player Parlay Builder. For example, tonight you can bet on Tobias Harris to score 20 points at plus 370. Plus, FanDuel even lets you combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with a same-game parlay. So don't miss the chance to get your first no sweat first bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets by going to FanDuel.com/LockedOn. That's FanDuel.com/LockedOn to learn more. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. You sound like you're a little more positive. Now, I like the additions that they've made here, and I still think Jaren Reed can get the job done. And him coming back to Seattle, working with Clint Hurt and company again, I think that's going to work out. But then you look at the rest of the depth chart right now. Miles Adams is the third most experienced player that they have in the defensive tackle group. Brian Monet is the only nose they have, and we don't know if he's even going to be able to play this year
right,
with the knee injury he had. And then you've got a couple practice squad guys below that have never played in a game. So, yeah, you've made these nice additions that could be starters, but you've got so many questions. I guess for me, with Al Woods getting cut a couple of days ago, part of me is wondering, like, what the hell is John Schneider doing? Like, I'm sure there are some plans there, but at the same time, there's not a lot of cap space, and they don't have a lot of options to try to open up cap space either.
Yeah, and I think this is one of those situations where, you know, that you just have to wait how the – I think they have to wait and see how the offseason kind of goes. Like, number one, they have the draft coming up. I think, obviously, they'll, like, try and fill out the roster doing, like, the rookie camps and the offseason training camps where they sign different guys and sort of, like, have that list of players that they, like, want to try and see how they fit with everything. And then, of course, you have trade options in the preseason and you have roster cutdowns in the preseason. So I'm guessing you're absolutely right. Like, it looks really bare right now in terms of, like, what they have. And not only at, like, nose tackle and just defensive tackle in general, but, like, linebacker, I think there are obviously still gaps to fill there. You know, and so and I think there's still big question marks with, like, Jamal Adams and, like, whether he's going to be ready to play. So there's definitely a lot of question marks on the defense that they're still going to have to address. But we are still pretty early in the process, I think, and they're going to, like, try and, like, work all those different scenarios and try and figure that out. So, the other option is too, like, they just trade back out of the first pick that they have and just, like, pick, like, 12 times. You know what I mean? Like, this is, like, exactly, this is probably, like, John Schneider's dream is just, like, trade back a few times and amass, like, 12 or 13 picks and try and fill the roster out that way a little bit.
I'm kind of picturing John Schneider with this draft where it doesn't seem like there's as many, like, superstar guys at the top, but it's an extremely deep class at positions that they need. This strikes me as a situation where it would almost be you could Photoshop him onto Vince McMahon on the meme where he's just leaning back, super excited.
Trade back again.
It strikes me as a draft where he'd be like, I'm going to try to get like 17 picks. I'm going to see what I could do. And you know, maybe then you could just totally reinvent your defensive line. But I'm glad you mentioned Jamal Adams just because it feels like the Seahawks right now are between a rock and a hard place with him. And I loved the trade when they made it, even though it was really expensive. The first year he goes out and gets 9.5 sacks, you kind of saw what they envisioned him doing out there. Even before he got hurt his second year, we're starting to play better in coverage. But, I mean, it's been almost a year and a half since we've really gotten to see him play football, and the injury he's coming off of is one that a lot of guys don't bounce back from. Mm-hmm. It just feels like this is a conundrum that now is staring them in the face as they're trying to build the rest of their team right now.
Right. I don't even, like, I haven't looked at it lately. Like, can they even get out of his contract at this point? Like, is he just basically stuck with them at this
point? If they did a post June 1st cut, I think they would open up $8 million in cap space.
There you go.
But that doesn't give them much flexibility right now.
Sure. But I think that's, like, why you see them, you know, showing interest in safeties. Obviously they signed Julian Love in free agency. He's not like a one-to-one guy, but, yeah, that is something that I think the Seahawks could either maybe like look to move on from him at this point, like depending on how he is coming back from this injury. I don't know. To me, he's like, I know this sounds bad, but like I have almost just sort of like written him off at this point as like I don't really expect him to do anything going forward for the Seahawks. If he is with the team, it doesn't feel like he's, you know, shown the ability to stay healthy. And if he's not, like, you know, I just sort of have not included him in the calculus of like what the Seahawks are doing since he got hurt last year. So I don't know. That's probably, you know, a little callous, I guess. But like, I just really don't think about him when I think about like the 2023 Seahawks. So we'll see what happens. And if he could make an impact, like that would be a huge bonus. But I'm not really counting on it.
Let's swing to the draft because you have one of the best draft guides out there. I'm always waiting for it every single year when it drops on the Ringer. And of course, I've already looked through it, looked through some of the updates on it. Let's talk Seahawks, though. They have the number 5 pick. I mean, this is rare air. They haven't had a pick this high since before John Schneider and Pete Carroll arrived. We remember that one didn't work out so well with Aaron Curry. But they've got so many options with the moves they have made, bringing their quarterback back, some of the additions like Evan Brown getting signed and Devin Bush. They've really stacked their roster up, at least in free agency, to give themselves some flexibility. And yet they're still doing their views on C.J. Stroud and company. But really the big question is Jalen Carter still on their draft board? That seems like that's something that people are very torn on, whether John Schneider's still going to have him on there or not. I personally think the Malik McDowell effect is going to be in play. But what do you think, based on what we know, how this offseason's transpired and the red flags that are now out there?
Yeah, it's one of those things where during the offseason, during this whole period of like the mock the draft season, this is something that always happens, like one or two different guys. Like last year we saw with like Kayvon Thibodeau, like there's off-field stuff that creates sort of this narrative that teams are very worried about a person or like worried about his off-field interests or, you know, there's whatever, how many millions of different things. I usually try and ignore that to a certain extent just because there's a lot of smoke. You have people creating smoke screens and like putting that information out there because they want him and they want him to fall. Like, it's just hard to know what to believe. But with this Jalen Carter situation, obviously, it is, I think, a little more serious than the normal, the standard like pre-draft buzz on a guy, or lack of buzz, I guess, is like the opposite term or whatever, like the worries around a guy. This is a situation where obviously he was involved in what the police are saying was like racing, and that was what partially led to the crash that two people were killed, two of his friends were killed at. And that's obviously a very, very serious situation. Then you have him dealing with all the ramifications from that. He comes into his pro day nine pounds heavier than he was at the combine. That's a pretty major red flag. So the combination of that, plus there was already, I think, whispers and concerns about some of his effort and things like that. It, to me, it's like, this is starting to actually worry me a little bit. If I'm being totally honest, like this young man is like going through a hard situation right now. And like, it's hard to know like exactly what's going on in his head. So I think there is a chance that teams are looking at this situation and he could fall, despite the fact that he is one of the top and most talented players in this draft. There's just a lot of things that could make teams decide to go in a different direction. You know, obviously he's playing an interior defensive line position, which is not generally speaking like a premium position at the top of the draft either. So like we could see him fall quite a bit. I think it's possible at least. And I don't know where the Seahawks stand on that. I think you're right with the some of the misses that they've had in the past where and you've heard John Schneider and Pete Carroll allude to it, where they're like talking about how they are making exceptions and like making excuses for players that they probably shouldn't have taken or whatever. You know, if they look at what they did last year and had so much success, I think they're probably going to look at that and be like, look, we're not going to, if I had to lean anyway, they'd say like, maybe we're not going to like make exceptions, quote unquote, make exceptions or like make excuses for a guy. We're just going to like take the guys that we feel really, really strongly about. So that could be a reason that they decide not to go with Jalen Carter. So, I have mocked him to the Seahawks in the past. I'm starting to not think that they would take him, though. Like that, if I had to lean, it's just a little bit leaning towards he's not going to be their guy in the first round.
I guess the way that I'm viewing it right now, I completely agree with you. I do wonder if John Schneider traded down like 5 or 6 picks, if Carter was still there at like 11 or 12.
Right.
The difference in cost, that might be enough of a difference where he's like, you know what, I'm more willing to roll the dice here. And yet you look at the draft class last year, it was almost all former team captains or engineering degrees. Like that's been the kind of guys they've been drafting.
I mean,
Malik McDowell. So
yeah,
I don't know. I find it hard to believe. And maybe they know something we don't know. And he is dealing with a lot of stuff that might explain what he did at the pro day, but it doesn't seem like he's showing the competitiveness and the grit that are like the cornerstones of what John Schneider and Pete Carroll are looking for. So
the grit thing is exactly what I was thinking. And you know, again, I don't have like any insight on him as a worker, but like the whispers are from like, I think Todd McShay has brought it up several times. He got heat for even bringing it up, but you know, there's been whispers in around his work ethic in terms of like in practice, like they had to like ride him a lot in practice to like, you know, that kind of stuff. Like that was separate from all this other stuff that's happening now. So there's maybe just a confluence of things here that would have teams decide just to go in a different direction. And I could see the Seahawks in particular, because they, like you said, they like guys that really want to strain, really want to work hard, you know, want to put their whole self into like football and like live football and love ball and all that stuff. Like that's something that they really have, you know, preached about for the last like 10, 15 or 10, however many years they've been here, 10, 11 years. You know, I think that that could be sort of like the difference maker, the factor that makes them move in a different direction. So yeah, I'm kind of, that's where I am right now too.
Most of the mock drafts that we've seen have had the Seahawks picking Tyree Wilson, or if Will Anderson falls to him, Jalen Carter. There's still a few with quarterbacks, maybe if the right guy's there. But let's talk some wild cards, because we know John Schneider. Last year was the first year, you and I were joking about this before we did the show today, that he normally is the most unconventional general manager, and yet last year was like as conventional by the book as you'll ever see. Maybe right. That's what he's going to do from now on, but we know his past precedent suggests that he's going to have a curveball to throw somebody. With two first-round picks, what positions do you view as wild cards that you could see John Schneider, if a certain player is available? And we already mentioned one name earlier, but what is a wild card position you could see John Schneider saying, you know what, yeah, we need defensive linemen, we need linebackers, whatever, but this is the best player available, we're taking this guy.
Yeah, I think a couple names come to mind for me. Like number five is that's like a spot where you like have to get it right. And like the I think like the polar opposite of what we were talking about with like Jalen Carter, like the concerns over character and work ethic and everything are like exactly what Nolan Smith out of Georgia has in spades. Like his reputation is basically like he is the hardest working guy. He's like an amazing leader. He's like this glue guy on this team.
Yeah.
In addition to the fact he ran like a 4.39 in the 40, you know, he's very like, the size thing is a concern, but like everything else about him, he was literally the top recruit in the country. Everything else about him is like, this guy is Seahawk-y as like hell. I don't know in terms of like the scheme fit exactly how he would fit, because, you know, he's actually pretty similar to Nuoso. And so I don't really know if they would want to like double up at that, or maybe that's like something that they view as a positive, like having some
off ball linebacker.
Maybe. I mean, sure. We can see where they go, but I think he's a guy that's sort of like a dark horse. Not anyone is talking about him as a top five prospect, but like I could see the Seahawks taking him and like feeling fine about it. Or like we mentioned earlier, like trading back a few spots and then taking him at like 10 or 11 or something like that. Cause that's like, you know, similar to what they did with Bruce Irvin a couple of years ago. It's like, this guy was the most athletic pass rusher. He was playing in a weird scheme and like didn't really have the opportunity, and they traded back and then took Bruce, but they had talked about how they like would have taken him however early it was. I can't remember exactly where they traded back from, but yeah, like I could see him being sort of like a dark horse guy that they really like and want to have be they'd be willing to take him that high. The other, I think, dark horse thing that we should talk about that I think Seahawks fans immediately dismiss every time it's brought up is a corner at number five. You know, because famously the Seahawks haven't taken a corner before like the pick 90 or something like that in 10, 11 drafts. And how many drafts is it now? Is it 10 or 11?
This will be the 14th, actually.
14th? Good God. We're getting
older. Yeah, I mean, I'm already bald, so I don't have to worry about feeling old, but that makes me feel old.
I'm with you on, honestly. Yeah, 14th draft. So in 14 drafts, they've never taken a corner before pick 90. But I don't think that means they're like, as a rule against it. I think it's just like how it's kind of worked out. And honestly, they don't pick that high anyway, usually. And so a guy like Christian Gonzalez kind of stands out to me, like freakishly athletic, really long, really physical. He could be a guy that they potentially consider there. So I think that if we're talking about like surprises, I think, yeah, like Tyree Wilson is sort of the chalk pick at this point, and Jalen Carter's up there too, and or trade back. But like, maybe like a undersized edge like Nolan Smith or a corner or something like that, I think would be something that is I'm not putting it past the Seahawks for doing something wild like that.
Yeah. And we know at number 20 that the entire cabinet is open once you get to that point in the first round, because you're past the blue chip players. Well, most of them, unless you are like me and maybe you and your subscriber. Yeah. Well, running backs can matter. I don't know. I'm really intrigued by the idea of Ken Walker III and Bijan Robinson being in the same backfield.
That would be a pretty absurdly ridiculous backfield. I think here's how I look at it, and here's how, like, from talking to people at the combine and you know, trying to get the temperature on like what the Seahawks were thinking. Like, the reason the Seahawks did so well, or think they did so well last year, wasn't necessarily that they stuck to the premium positions. It was just that they took the higher graded players on their board. Like, we're not trying to fit, we're not trying to like, oh, like, you know, we're sitting there at X pick and we need a, like, we need a linebacker or something like that, whatever. So we need to like reach on this guy, even though we have like 12 other players ahead of him in our grading. Like, we need to fill this spot. We need to have somebody come in and start. So we need to pick this guy. Instead of doing that, they were like, this is our highest graded player. We're just going to sit here and take him and hope it works out. Having that depth is going to be good in the long run. I think that's why they took, I think that John Schneider, I think, mentioned specifically, that's like why they took Abe Lucas in the third round. It's like, he was their highest graded player, even though, you know, they already took a tackle, they took another one. They took a couple of corners, you know, just, and it worked out that it was the premium positions. And so maybe that like looks good, like they're getting back to like the analytical part of it, where we want to take like tackles and edge rushers early and like it not take a running back, for crying out loud. Don't take a running back in the first round. However, long way of saying it is, if they're sitting there at 20 and Bijan Robinson has a top five grade on their board and no one else at that point, which I think is actually very realistic that no one else would come close to the type of grade that Bijan Robinson would have there at 20, I could see a scenario where they just take him because he's a really, really good runner. He's a really dynamic runner. He's an explosive runner. He can factor into the passing game. And I think they could talk themselves into it. Now, obviously,
Pete Carroll could definitely talk himself into it.
I mean, and like, obviously Seahawks Twitter would destroy itself from within, but you know, it would be very fun to watch him play football. I'll put it that way. Like, I would be very excited to watch him on Sundays. I'll put it that way. I don't think it would be necessarily the I still subscribe to there's an opportunity cost when you're taking running backs that early, but at the same time, there's a pretty major opportunity cost. But this is also a type of in any given football game, you're handing the football to like a running back, like 15, 20 times, however many times. Like, don't you want to get the absolute freaking most out of those carries? Don't you want to have the ability to create explosive plays? Like, I can see it from the football guy point of view. You know what I mean? Like we don't want to hand the football to some jag that we got in the fifth round 20 times a game. We want to hand it to this guy who's a freak athlete who can like make guys miss and like take it to the house. That's from their point of view. I can actually kind of understand that, even though, you know, obviously teams find running backs everywhere. And so, you know, I think that there's definitely a strong argument that it's a huge waste of a first round pick, but, you know, if they have him for 4 years, they use the fifth year option, you got a really cost controlled elite running back in theory. Yeah, I could see the Seahawks doing it. And that's what I did in my mock draft. I didn't actually get a lot of like pushback. I was kind of surprised. I thought people would be more, you know, upset with me. So we'll see how
I've seen goes. A lot of our listeners have been commenting saying they want Bijan Robinson. So apparently maybe Seahawks Twitter is going off the deep end right now.
Seahawks Twitter's been like running back pilled. I think, you know, we'll see how this all goes. Maybe they'll actually like it, but man,
maybe with what Ken Walker did last year, they're like, you know, I guess we can accept it. But this has been an absolute blast. One last question real quick, just because we know how much success John Schneider has had on day three getting players. And a lot of times he's been able to offset the LJ Collier picks where they have tried to force picking somebody for a need with picking good players on day three. Who are a couple Seahawks players that jump out to you that might be available on day three that John Schneider would be wise to go after?
Oh, that's a good question. So if we're sticking at the running back position, more realistically, the Seahawks take a day three running back, I think, than like a round one running back is probably more likely. A couple guys I think really fit what they're wanting to do. Roschon Johnson out of Texas, I really like, is a potential like fourth rounder type pick. He reminded me almost exactly in terms of style as Chris Carson. And then I looked it up and they had like eerily similar, like not only like college stats, because they both were sort of backups to, they were not like even starters on our team, but eerily similar athletic traits, like pretty much down to everything except for their vert was not quite the same. So he's a guy that I think would be really interesting. I think there's a ton of potential day three receivers that I think are really interesting. You know, guy like Michael Wilson from Stanford, I could see the Seahawks absolutely freaking loving this guy. He was hurt for huge chunks of his college career, which is obviously a huge red flag, but Athletically, he's really, really quick. He kind of actually he's not the same size. He's a lot bigger, but like he kind of reminds me of Doug Baldwin just because he's super, super quick off the line. You know, he has an ability to shake a guy with like his first two steps. He can, you know, the term that I heard recently that I love is like he can beat a guy off the dribble. He's like just so quick with the first couple steps to get into his route and make things happen. That's like kind of like Doug Baldwin, how he was like really into like basketball in his route running, basketball moves in his route running. So I think that's a guy that the Seahawks fans should certainly circle as like a day two guy, probably fourth round, fifth round, just because he didn't really do anything in college, but he blew up the Senior Bowl. He's really good at the Senior Bowl. I think he's tested really well. And he's, from a character standpoint, everything I know about him is that he's just gritty as hell. Like he's just the most gritty guy. Obviously, you know, going to Stanford, he's very smart as well. So he's another guy that kind of keep in mind. Puka Nacua from BYU, Parker Washington, Penn State. There's probably like 15 or 20 receivers I'd be pretty excited about.
So, it's a year that starts with 2-0, right? I mean, yeah, all the 7-on-7 and stuff.
Yeah. There's a couple of tight ends if they really wanted to go that route. You know, there's quite a few defensive tackles that could be interesting. I think they showed some interest in Carl Brooks from Bowling Green, who played edge. He played edge in college, even though he's like 300 pounds, but he's like really athletic. He could be a type of guy that could bump inside and be an interior rusher. I think actually this class kind of lines up outside of like linebacker, which I'm not quite sure about. There's a couple guys, the Diane Henley from Wazoo is, I think, on the Seahawks fans' radar right now, which would be a really good pick for them, I think. But outside of that, there's like 100 corners, there's 100 receivers, there's 100 running backs, and there's 100 edge guys that I would like be pretty intrigued with. So like that depth, I think, in like the second, third, fourth, fifth round, you can find guys that are going to contribute, I think, early on and like at least play like a role. They might not be superstars, but they could play a role on a team. And so there's that again, that's another, I think, strong indication, like trading back and having like 12 picks by the end of the day could be something realistic I could see for the Seahawks, because there's so many guys at those positions that the Seahawks really could like stack up on and kind of go that direction.
There's a lot to be excited about if you're a Seahawks fan, because you get 10 picks, you get four in the top 52, a top five pick, and John Schneider, he's feeling a hot streak going after what happened last season, maybe some adjustments they made. And so it's really going to be a fascinating exercise to see what they do early in the draft. And of course, everybody wants to see what they do on day three, because they always seem to find a couple of those diamonds and roughs. They'll be hoping to find another Tariq Woolen or somebody like that. Anyway, Danny, it's been a blast, man. Thanks so much for the insight, especially on the draft stuff. And we'll see if John Schneider or Pete Carroll are listening in and decide, you know what, Bijan Robinson would be interesting at pick 20.
Oh, my God. It would legitimately break the internet. But
Twitter would explode. It's already on the verge, so.
I'm kind of rooting for it at this point. I'm, like, buying in. I'm running back pilled at this point, so, yeah.
Elon Musk got us to the finish line, and then the Seahawks fan base took it over the finish line. That's where things go. It's been a blast, Danny, man. Take care, enjoy the draft, and keep up the great work.
All right, likewise, man. Thank you for having me.
As always, you can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. Subscribe or follow Locked On Seahawks for free on YouTube or wherever you listen to podcasts for the latest episode that drops every single weekday. Coming up on our Blue Friday episode, Nick Lee and I will be playing a game, a little bit of buy or sell with Seattle's free agent signings and much more. Hope you'll be listening in. Thanks for tuning into this guest interview. Go Hawks.